welcome to the Exotic Pet Collective. My name is Richard, and today's guest is, I'm very excited for you all to hear her story. She is a very, I guess I want to say famous artist in the exotic pet hobby. I see her stuff everywhere. I've actually got three pieces of her artwork here in my basement. I know a lot of you all have seen or own some of her artwork as well. So we're going to go ahead and bring her on. But first, I do want to thank the sponsors of today's show. And our first sponsor today is no stranger to the podcast, and that is our friends over at Arthropod Ambassadors. Now, their aim is to support others interested in bugs and the well-being of arthropods around the world. They're working on spreading education with Resin Art, the Mobile Bug Zoo, and informational YouTube videos, as well as a recent new line of stickers and pins. From compost-enhancing roly-polies to alien-like top predator mantises, arthropods come in all shapes and sizes and are waiting to teach us more about the Earth that we all have in common. So if you're looking for a mantis, jumping spiders, isopods, roaches, or assassin bugs, head on over to arthropodambassadors.com and check out what species they have available. You can also find very helpful care videos for your pet mantis, scorpions, vingaroons, isopods, tarantulas, and other arthropods on their YouTube channel, also called Arthropod Ambassadors. You can also follow them on Instagram and Facebook and stay up to date with any new content or species that they may have available in the future. So a huge thanks to Arthropod Ambassadors for sponsoring this podcast. And if you want to learn more about them, I'll link the podcast that we did together at the end of this video or down below in the show notes. And our second sponsor today is none other than TarantulaCribs.com. If you're looking for high-end acrylic enclosures for your tarantulas, scorpions, isopods, or pretty much any invertebrate, then you need to head over to TarantulaCribs.com. They recently restocked their website, and they have some new products coming out in the very near future, like larger enclosures. So whether you're looking for an arboreal or terrestrial enclosure, they have a wide variety of sizes for any stage of your invert's life. I use them a lot for my tarantulas and true spiders, and they're my favorite enclosure by far. And if you use the code TCollective10 at checkout, you'll receive 10% off your entire order. Currently, they're only available to residents of the United States, but they are working on international shipping, so hopefully that'll be available soon. So thank you so much, Tarantula Cribs, for supporting this podcast and for all the sponsors today. You guys are awesome, and you're integral in keeping this podcast up and running.
So welcome to the podcast for the first time, our friend and well-known artist, Laura from Grey Ghost Creations. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. It is very good having you. Thank you so much. I know it's kind of been a little crazy trying to get our schedules lined up, but I'm glad we finally are able to do this.
Definitely.
So how are you? How are things?
Busy.
Yeah.
Always busy.
Very cool. Just so in case somebody listening isn't aware who you are, could you just give us a little bit of background information about yourself? Like who you are, what Grey Ghost Creations is, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I've been drawing since I could hold a crayon. And I really got into the reptile and exotic world because of watching Steve Irwin. He's the one that really inspired me. And over the years, I was able to get a ball python and a bearded dragon. And it inspired me so much. I worked at a Scales and Tails, which is a local place here, and really familiar. Got to work.
Scales and Tails. Is that a pet shop?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. It's a reptile shop.
All right.
And I got to work one-on-one with a lot of really cool animals, and it really inspired me. As I've been drawing, I've started drawing more professionally, and I was like, you know, not very many people draw bearded dragons. They don't draw snakes. They don't draw spiders. And so I really got into drawing them. I enjoy it.
Very cool. I definitely enjoy your artwork, and it's called Grey Ghost Creations. What's the story behind that name?
So, I love African antelope. I love them. And I'm pretty good at saying what certain things are and, identifying species. Mm-hmm. And, the kudu is known as the Great Ghost of Africa. And I was like, that's kind of creepy. I like it. It's a very kudu. Cool.
So. I've always wondered that.
So I went with that.
ever since I first started seeing you post your drawings on Facebook, I've always tried to like What does the gray ghost mean? But yeah, I guess that makes sense. And I can see from the background here, you've got a lot of enclosures behind you. So what all kind of exotic pets do you keep back there?
So I have a couple of little super dwarf reed ticks.
Okay.
They're babies right now, and they're smaller than a typical reed tick. So a couple of the bigger enclosures back there are the reed ticks. They'll obviously get much better enclosure as they get older.
Right.
Some of the smaller ones are younger colubrids.
Okay. So do you mainly just keep snakes? Tarantulas. You got some tarantulas? Okay. What kind of tarantulas do you have back there?
Okay, so don't laugh at my terrible Latin names.
That's okay.
But
I'm pretty bad myself.
Pulchripes.
Okay.
Back there, I've got a green bottle blue.
All right, good choice.
But most of my tarantulas are downstairs.
Oh, okay.
Because I have cats, and that doesn't mix well. So
very true. That is very.
They're mostly in a room that cats aren't in.
Gotcha.
Let's see. I have like some blue-footed baboons, a couple different avics.
So what got you into keeping exotic pets? Like where did your fascination for, you know, keeping these snakes and tarantulas and all other kinds of creepy crawlies, where did that come from?
So a lot of it came from just watching like Steve Irwin on TV sort of thing. Lots of exotic shows and stuff like that, and then working at Scales and Tails that really just kind of piqued my interest and got me more interested in it. And it's funny, the spiders, I didn't really care for them when I first worked at Scales and Tails.
Okay.
And there was this gentleman that would come in, and he was really into these tarantulas, and he was an older guy. He was kind of like a biker guy, and he would come in and be like, oh, this cobalt blue, and just, you know, pick it up, no problem. And he really got me interested in and intrigued with them.
Very cool.
So I ended up taking a few home, and that started the whole process.
So did this start when you were like a child, or were you, you know, moved out of your parents' house and on your own when you started keeping exotic pets?
Oh, so I was still at my parents' house.
Yeah.
It was probably when I was 15 or 16.
Okay.
And they put up with it.
Yeah.
They put up with it. That's but they awesome. Were happy when I moved out.
Yeah. I can imagine. So you keep bringing up Scales and Tails. And I don't know why that sounds so familiar. What state is that in? Or is it like a chain?
Colorado.
It's in Colorado?
It's a Colorado thing. There's like five or six of them here.
Yeah. I know a few people, a couple of the mods in the Facebook group are in Colorado. So maybe that's where I've heard that brought up more than once, but it sounds like an interesting story.
Yeah. And you know, they do some shows and stuff. They're each store is different because it's different owners. Uh-huh. There's one that I really like that's kind of nearby. And there's also 5280 Reptiles that's nearby, and they're really good.
So looking at your artwork, I mean, it seems like I've got, I mean, just like right here off camera, it looks like a jumping spider, some T. celadonia. I know I've got one, the Caribbean Versicolor, I think I put in a video at one point. But then on top of the, just like the tarantulas and spiders, you've got crested geckos. I'm just kind of like quickly going through your store right here. Just different snakes and I mean, you know, all kinds of cool animals. Like, how do you choose the subject that you're going to draw? Are these like all like customer requests or commission paintings or drawings or whatever, or do you are they just things that fascinate you?
A lot of them are things that fascinate me. Some of them are commissions, but I don't take on too many right now. I just don't have the time. Some of them are, I don't request, but I listen. So if people are constantly asking, hey, I want to see a crested gecko, I listen.
Gotcha.
And it's funny you mentioned the Versicolor. So that one I did maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I'm working on one right now that's showing all of them.
Oh, wow.
So the baby, the yearling, and the adult.
Very cool. It's like all three stages of the C. versicolor's life. the colors and patterns. And that's very interesting.
And this isn't a good picture. I apologize. The lighting's not very good in here, but
that's okay.
This actually looks really good.
I mean, seeing your other artwork, I believe you 100%. I don't remember if you sent me some. I think I bought the first one. I saw that you had posted in the Facebook group or something. I was like, wow, that's really cool. And purchased one. And then I think you sent me some later on. But you also included in there, I think I gave them away in a live stream or something, but a couple of pendants that were like, I can't remember which ones they were, but they were like necklaces. Do you make a whole lot of jewelry as well? Or is it mainly just drawings?
Both.
Yeah.
I think both. I did kind of a small series of spiders and they did really well.
Yeah.
So every once in a while I sit down and draw a few new pendant designs and release a few new ones, and I enjoy it. And people get to easily show off what species they like or that they enjoy tarantulas. And it's not something that's just on the wall.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of tarantula jewelry out there.
No.
But I've also seen you share something that are like skulls that you've painted or something like that. Yeah. I remember seeing one that was like an OBT or something painted on. I have no idea what type of skull it was, but it looked like some kind of deer or something. I don't know.
Probably a coyote.
A coyote. Okay. So can you just tell us a little bit about that process, like where you source the skulls from and how you paint them? And you know, it sounds like an interesting kind of medium to do artwork.
Yeah. So once upon a time again, I used to work at a Native American trading company, and I really got inspired by their artwork and using a lot of natural things like leather and bones. So I get a lot of my skulls from that company, and I use a lot of like India ink, Copic markers, some different paints, but I just wanted to do something different. So I was able to use the bones. I was able to put some different artwork on it. And I even recently started sculpting mushrooms and stuff nice. Like that on it.
I am a big fan of mushrooms right now. I don't know where
that's to show you a picture of the recent ones I've been doing. They take forever because I actually hand sculpt the mushroom.
Oh, wow. I remember it was sometime around, I don't know if it probably wasn't last fall, but the fall before, you posted some drawings of, was it maybe the Venezuelan sun tiger or something in a pumpkin patch, or maybe it was a pumpkin patch. I don't remember.
My favorite time of the year is Halloween and fall and all that. So honestly, if it was up to me and I was just drawing whatever I wanted, it'd probably all be fall and Halloween themed. But
I feel you.
I did a sun tiger on pumpkins, and people are like, why didn't you do a pumpkin patch? And I'm like, well, the sun tiger was black, and pumpkin patches will kind of fade into the pumpkin a little. But I am going to do a pumpkin patch on pumpkins this year.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to do it on white pumpkins.
That's so clever.
It pops better.
But in addition to all drawing all these tarantulas, you draw a lot of snakes, and you mentioned antelopes or something like that. Gazelles. I don't remember what the right word is, but I've always been curious, like, I know that you can't have these as pets, but I mean, do you see them in the wild or at zoos and stuff like that? Or are you where do you get the reference material, I guess would be the right word. I don't really know if that is the right word. But
so some of it is from zoos. I mean, I have a decent camera I'll take. I also went with my dad a couple of years ago to Africa, and I took some really good photos that I've been able to use as reference photos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many artists draw African lions. They draw zebras. You don't see a Nyala. You don't see a Steenbuck. You don't see
kudu very often.
And they're all African antelope.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds interesting. You went to Africa? Like, what? Can you tell us about that? That sounds like an exciting time. Was it like a on safari or business or what?
It was safari with my dad.
Yeah.
So we really had a good time. I got some cool pictures. I was that nut taking pictures of rocks and sticks.
Yeah.
Because I was like, these will be good references for tarantulas, like African species.
I mean, Africa is a pretty big continent. Like what area of Africa were you in?
South Africa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's down there with like the H. pulchripes or pulchripes or whatever. Mm-hmm. The gold blue leg baboon, yep. Before I butcher the Latin name too bad. Did you see any tarantulas while you were out there, or was it mainly the large game? Most
large game, yeah. Or tarantula holes.
So how much time did you spend in Africa?
A week.
A week? That's mm-hmm. that sounds amazing. I'd love to go there sometime.
Yeah, I want to go back.
Yeah. So what kind of crazy, was there any crazy stories? Any animals come right up to your Jeep or anything like that, or pretty laid back? Did you see anything fun?
It was pretty laid back.
Yeah.
It was all fun, all of it. It was seeing lots of interesting species, getting lots of really cool pictures. It was really fun.
Nice. I think the closest I've ever come to doing something like that was going to Animal Kingdom at Disney World with my parents when I was in high school or something, had a little safari truck or whatever you could get on. It's like a fancy zoo. That was about it. Have you ever been to Animal Kingdom?
Yeah. When I was real little. That made me think, I actually do have some good stories. So when we first got there was mm-hmm. this really beautiful bug, and I'm taking pictures and I'm like, wow, I wonder what this is. And I get back and I look in my guide and it's a bont tick. And it's like,
what's that?
Bite will cause necrosis and holy on and Jesus. On and on. And I'm like, of course it was. And then I see this really beautiful moth that had gone into my napkin in my glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I take it outside, let it go, look it up later. And it says, like, do not come in contact, will cause extreme itching. And I'm like, why is everything so sharp and dangerous here?
Wow. So I've always been curious, because I mean, it's something I've always dreamed of doing is going to Africa on a safari. I've never had the chance, but it always seems very, I don't know how to describe it. It seems like you're roughing it. You know, I mean, do they have like nice hotels? Is it, is it comparable to like, you know, I don't know, going to Florida or something, staying in a, you know, in a Holiday Inn, or are you like in a hut and they come and pick you up? Like, how does that work?
So it depends on what you want to do.
Yeah.
There's resorts out there where you can go and be pampered the whole time. There's also like what we did is we were in fancy huts.
Mm-hmm.
So my hut had this beautiful walk-in shower and a really nice bed. It was a hut, but it was a beautiful hut.
Yeah. Did it have air conditioning? I guess that's the important question. Okay.
Yes. It was like the fanciest hut you could think of.
Nice.
And around the property was the electric fence.
Okay.
And that was to keep Cape Buffalo out.
Okay.
Because they're pretty dangerous, but it didn't keep leopards out.
Oh, wow.
So you kind of just had to watch, you know, when you walked from one hut to another.
That's wild. Yeah. So would you see like elephants, lions? I mean, basic stuff like that?
Not where we went. It was mostly antelope type things.
Gotcha.
It just depends on where you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I know embarrassingly little about Africa, as fascinated as I am with some of the animals that come there. I think the most of what I know comes from like the Antwoord music videos and Coming to America, the movie. And, and then like just horrible documentaries I watch on dictators and, you know, like the wars and stuff in Africa. So pirates. Yeah. And it's like, I know, like I for whatever reason focus on the comical or the terrible, and it's like I'm missing all the beauty. Like Congo was my favorite movie for a while when I was a kid. Do you remember that one with
I loved that movie. Yeah.
And I always was like, I totally want to go, but it was like the more I learned about the Congo, politically and environmentally, it's like, that's an extremely dangerous place. I don't know if I'm actually going to go there. Everything in the jungle is out to kill you, it seems.
And it's not even so much the animals that are scary.
Yeah.
It's the politics. It's so we would drive to town once in a while. Mm-hmm. And there were signs on our drive that literally said, do not stop your car for any reason. Do not get out for any reason, because crime was so horrible.
Yeah.
So I don't think we have too many places here where it says, don't stop. Don't get out for any reason.
Yeah. I mean, there's some places that you probably know you shouldn't, but I don't think they put a sign up.
Yeah.
When I was, I was watching something about, I'll never remember what it was. I was watching something about volcanoes, a documentary on volcanoes. And part of what they were trying to trace back the earliest like fossils of man. And it was in some desert in Africa. But they were like, while they were doing that, they were like, you know, all these archaeologists from Harvard and, you know, all these different schools. I don't think it was Harvard. I think it was Berkeley, but not that that matters. But they were, you know, archaeologists and biologists and stuff like that. Because it used to be, I don't remember what it was, but I mean, it's just like one of the hottest places on Earth. And maybe it was like a lake or an ocean or something at one point. Or a jungle. I don't remember what it was, but just because of erosion and stuff, the sediment that's being exposed through erosion dates back like, I don't remember, 100,000 years or 200,000 years or something like that. Like right when Homo sapiens were starting to emerge from, you know, the other, maybe that's what it was, but they were trying to find, but I think it was like even earlier than that, like these just different hominids. I don't even know if that's the right word, hominids. It sounds like it is.
Sounds right.
Yeah. I'm talking about scientific stuff and I know nothing about it. So excuse me if I'm like making up weird things, but you know, kind of like the missing link kind of stuff. And the bones were 100,000 or 200,000 years old, something like that. And yeah, they were so old that they were, and so brittle that they were only able to find like little pieces of it. But in that area, in that desert, erosion had worn down the sediment to that time frame. You know, so they were finding all kinds of different animal bones, but they had fossil hunters out there that were able to identify, okay, this is a human bone, this is a human bone, and they're putting it all together and trying to reconstruct it. But the reason I was telling that story is because kind of something they had mentioned multiple times was in that area. It was such a political hotbed of, it was a mess, and they couldn't go anywhere, even way out in the middle of the desert. They had to have armed guards with them. So it was, you know, it was like private security forces and camos with machine guns and stuff like that. And they're like, you know, this is fascinating research, amazing things here, but it's also extremely dangerous.
And yep, I would say if you're planning a trip to Africa, plan to have a guide.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to go. It's just, that is a little intimidating.
Mm-hmm. And our guide always had a gun.
Yeah.
Because you never know.
Yeah. It could be people. It could be a lion or a mm-hmm. cheetah or jaguar.
Yep. I mean, I just heard a news article the other day that a couple people were killed by lions.
Oh, wow.
It happens.
Yeah.
Everyone sees like the Lion King and they're like, oh, cute little lions. And I'm like, they'll eat you. Yeah.
It was a stand-up comedian was talking about that, like how we're so lucky as human beings because we've been removed. Like we pretty much removed ourselves from the food chain. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we don't have to worry about lions or wolves or anything like that hunting us down. Because of that, we've gotten lazy and fat. It's like, maybe if you had to worry about wolves chasing you and trying to eat you on your way to work, we'd all be very fit and wouldn't have the problems with obesity and heart disease.
Yep. That's probably true.
So, just to get back to your art for a second, I went on this weird tangent about Africa. I apologize.
It's an interesting place.
Yeah. So did you get a lot of inspiration while you're in Africa for drawings and different artwork?
Yeah, I actually did. Like I said, I took lots of pictures of spider holes and rocks mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But I also took some zebra pictures, some steenbuck peaks. Pictures, Eland, Niala, and they're all things I want to draw eventually.
Yeah.
Blessbuck, they're interesting too. But I need time.
Yeah. How much time does it take to complete one drawing?
Anywhere from 10 to 35 hours.
Oh, wow. Just
depends on the drawing.
Yeah.
But since I work full time, it means I only get to drawing me in my evenings or on my weekends.
Yeah. So you're doing it like 1 or 2 hours at a time then? Kind of like in, wow. That's got to be, well, it's frustrating sometimes, I would imagine.
Yeah, because I have so many ideas. I'm like, I want to draw this and this and this. And
yeah. I keep saying drawing, but do you do other types of artwork? I mean, you've mentioned sculpting. I mean, do you paint or is it mainly just drawing?
Mainly drawing.
Yeah.
A little bit of sculpting here and there. But mainly drawing and mainly colored pencils.
Yeah.
For sure.
So what's that process like? Like, can you just kind of take us from start to finish, like how you decide what you're going to draw, what kind of, you know, canvas or paper, whatever you use, the type of, you know, what are the tools of the trade? And I think that would be interesting.
So I want to eventually do a blue-footed bat. I can't talk. I apologize. A blue-footed baboon. Okay. And if I do it, I'll do it in pastel pencils. And
all right, what are pastel pencils? How is that different from colored pencils?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
What's all around you, almost everywhere you look, and makes your life better? Birds. Learn all about these beautiful creatures in this wonderful new podcast called Birds of a Feather Talk Together. Two experts guide two newbies on their journey to learn more. Mallard ducks, ivory-billed woodpeckers, Hawaiian honeycreepers, blue jays, cardinals, sandhill cranes, and more. Each week we discuss a different bird and walk away with a better understanding of the birds all around us. Oh, and we have a ton of fun doing it. Listen now. You're going to like learning about these birds. I guarantee it.
So a typical colored pencil, this is a Prismacolor.
Mm-hmm.
They're wax-based. And then, let's see.
Now, like the Crayola colored pencils I get for my kid, are those are not wax-based? Is that what you're implying?
I don't even know what they're based.
She's like, I don't touch those kid toys.
You can do decent art with them.
Yeah.
It's about your skill level, but when it comes down to doing a good piece, you need good supplies.
Yeah.
And Prismacolors are inexpensive and they're a good step up.
Okay.
The next step from there is like Polychromos pencils or Luminance pencils. And they're oil-based.
Mm.
A little more light-fast, which means that they'll last longer. Like your drawing will last longer.
Okay.
So
these draw, like, You draw something, you spend all this like 30 hours on it, and what does it start fading or cracking, or like what do you mean when you say last longer?
Like if you were to frame it,
mm-hmm,
50 years from now, it might lose some of its luster, sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
But if it's light fast, it shouldn't.
Gotcha. I mean, I'm not going to be around in 50 years.
Years from now.
Okay.
Anything, even Crayola lasts a while.
I mean. What do you, is there like a process on how you decide? Like you said, you're gonna be doing the Bluefoot Baboon soon. Like how do you arrive on that? Like how do you know that's gonna be the next one I want to do? Is it just feel inspired to do it or
feel inspired to do it? I have some babies.
Okay.
So you know, it's inspired by just seeing them, and because they're cool, they're trapdoor.
Yeah, they are very cool. I had one actually escape. Like, I don't have many tarantulas that escape, but this one did. And I don't even remember how it happened. Man, I wish I just don't remember. I think that I didn't put the lid completely on. It was in one of those. It was a juvenile, you know, just barely. And I don't think that I made like the lid was like cocked off. It was one of those acrylic enclosures, you know, you get from like the Container Store. And so I didn't have it like locked down all the way. And I think he just kind of pushed it up and I didn't even know he was gone. And my kid woke me up because I used to have down here in the basement where I keep all the tarantulas, I had the dog crates. So like when we would leave, at the time, the dogs we had, they just didn't do well when nobody was in the house. They were like, they'd bark and scratch and try to get out. So you know, some separation anxiety going on there, but you know, we crate trained them. So they would just stay in the crates. Everything was good. We had their food and water dish down there, and the kid went down to feed them or something. And he was, the dogs weren't in the crates, but the little idiothelli, whatever it is, was in the food bowl. It's like it had crawled in and then for whatever reason, couldn't get back out or felt safe there and decided to hang out. He was like, I think one of your tarantulas is in the dog bowl. And I was like, it's probably just like a huntsman spider or something. Like it is the basement. And there's no way none of my tarantulas have escaped. I don't know how that could be. And I walked down there and was like, that is definitely a bluefoot bamboo. A little tiny guy. Let's get him back in his enclosure. How did this happen? And then even when I went to the enclosure, you couldn't, just looking at it, you couldn't tell that the lid was askew a little bit. And so like I went to take it off. I was like, oh, okay. I didn't have it pushed down all the way. So It's kind of like reinforced that that idea of going through and at the end of the day after feeding or rehousing or whatever, I'm pushing down on all the lids, making sure everything is nice and secure. Because they're a cool tarantula. I would hate to have lost that one. So you're drawing this, you get it, you spend 20, 30 hours making it. And then like, what's the process of actually like putting it up for sale and marketing? Because I had another guy when I first got into the hobby that was drawing, and he wanted to charge me like $200 or $300. Like it was a commissioned piece of artwork or whatever. So he was like, I don't remember how much it was, but and I was like, okay, like, you know, I know how much work I put into my videos, and you know, I'm sure you put an equal amount or more work into your drawing. So if you say that it's $200 worth of work, I will give you the $200. But then what he sent me wasn't the actual drawing. It was like he drew it, and then I don't know much about art, so you have to forgive me. But it was like a printing of his drawing, and I was kind of upset. I was like, well, and then he's like selling them all over the place. I'm like, what the heck? Why don't I get the original? I gave you a lot of money, it seemed like. So
yeah.
So how does that work in the world of artists?
So for me, I want structure to what our deal is. I say straight up, you're going to get the original, but I keep the rights to sell prints because I don't want to put all this work into something and not at least be able to sell prints. So it's all in writing as we go through it. And I also charge half up front and then the last half when I finish. And that gives me motivation to finish the whole project.
Yeah.
You know, gives the buyer some time. Cause my commissions, I've had to charge more lately because I didn't charge enough for how much time I was putting into it. So nowadays it's more in the 150 to 550 range.
Yeah, actually.
That's for an original piece of art.
There was a local artist here, and I'm not complaining. So if you're listening to the podcast, dude, I'm not complaining. But he does drawings for, I'm sure there's a specific genre for what it is, but I don't know what it's called. But like, if you think of like hand-drawn concert posters, is that, you know what I mean? Like he's done them for the String Cheese Incident, Dave Matthews Band, you know, a bunch of bands like that. There's a whole list of them, and I don't remember. We didn't really know each other, but because there was a specific type of art that I was looking for to make a t-shirt for tarantulas. And I was like, oh, this is really good. And then I found out he lived in the same town as I do. Sent him an email, told him what I was looking for. And his response was like, okay, that'll be $1,000. And I was like, wow, that's a little more than I was thinking, but you know, I'm sure it's worth it. So, and then like, we actually met face to face through a podcast I was doing. And you know, he's like, well, since now I know you, he's like, I just kind of throw that number out because I get requests all the time. And if I say $1,000, the only people that will respond to that are people that are actually serious. So it kind of cuts down on a lot of the, you know, stuff, people just wasting my time. Okay. So it's like, So hopefully I'll be working with him. He was like, he's pretty backed up right now, but, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to that, but yeah. So I mean, $150 to $550. Is that what you said? $250 to $550.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not bad at all.
And you know, art's one of those things where some people are charging 50 bucks for an amazing picture, and some people are charging $1 million for a square.
Yeah. It's very subjective.
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
comes down to what is your time worth to you? You know, like that's something that I struggle with a lot. Cause I feel like somebody just sent me an email, and I'm not going to put the company on blast, but they were like, we want to collaborate with you and do a sponsored video, which is like, you know, anywhere between 9 to 15 minutes, you know, in length. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we're going to send you our product in exchange for free. And then they make it sound like a really good deal. And I'm like, okay. And I go to their website. I look up the product that they want to send me. They're charging $13.95. And I was like, no way in the world. Like, I appreciate the offer, but that's not even $20 for even if I like just do a crappy job, you know, just a very quick, it's still like 5 to 10 hours worth of work, you know?
Definitely.
I was like, no, that's not a good deal for me. So we're going to pass on that.
And, with my prints. So sometimes people are like, wow, your prints are so cheap. And I'm like, when I go to see my favorite artists, I want to be able to buy a print, maybe two, and not leave spending $150. There's nothing worse than seeing some beautiful print you want and it's this big and it's $60-$75.
Yeah.
And I get it. Art's subjective. But I want people to be able to enjoy art. Like, I want people to be able to buy 5 or 6 prints and not totally break the bank.
Yeah. I mean, just going through your Etsy store, which is Grego's Creations on Etsy, if anybody's wondering. It's I mean, a lot of the prints you have are under $10, which is pretty shocking.
That's for the 5x7 size.
Okay. What's actually, I have one of yours right here. I have to pull it off the wall. I really need to get a frame for it, but where's my camera? So what is this? What is this size? Is that 5x7?
8x10.
That's an 8x10. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is beautiful. I love this one. And it's cool. It's got your signature on the back there. Mm-hmm. So did you do that just because you were sending it to me, or do you sign all of your prints that you ship out?
All my prints get signed.
Oh yeah. That's very cool.
Yep. Front and back.
Now I don't feel nearly as special.
Oh, you should. There's still love that goes into it.
Sign everybody's.
Yeah, but that'd be weird to get a print and it's not even signed. Like, I mean, occasionally artists do that because they drop ship.
Oh, okay.
If it's coming from the artist, it'd be nice to get it signed.
Yeah. And it's for a print, like when I'm looking at this, like I really have to look closely to know that it's not hand drawn. Like I worked at this store, at a business where we bought and sold, like mainly estate sales and stuff like that. And that was one of the, we would have to, like, you know, at an auction or whatever, determine pretty quickly, is this original or a lithograph or a print, you know? So we can get the little, you know, loop up to our eye and are looking at under magnification and trying to determine. Cause I mean, there's some really good fakes. And I mean, I'm not an art expert. You know, it was more like, you know, if somebody was halfway decent at faking art, I would totally get a gun ripped off. But it was just that basic kind of, you know, nobody knew what it was. You know, it's like a bunch of local people and some rich person died and we're all just kind of, it's almost like a big yard sale. You're like making offers on stuff. So it was mainly just trying to determine, is this, we don't know who the heck this artist is, but if it's an original, it's probably going to be worth a whole lot more than what they're, you know, the $25 they're asking for it or whatever. So, you know, it kind of determined that, but. Yeah, I'm very, very impressed with, do you do the, like, how do you get the print? Like, how does that work? I mean, if you're shipping them yourself and signing them, I mean, are you making them in your home or?
I have a home office and last year I invested in a really nice printer. It's like a archival ink and it was very expensive, but it was a good investment. So
yeah.
So I'm glad I got it.
And so do you like
good paper and.
So you draw the actual piece of art and then, I mean, do you scan it into a machine or take a photo of it? Like how does it render it?
I have a large format scanner.
Oh, okay. That's very cool. They're beautiful artworks. And then, you know, you're only charging 10, 15 bucks for it. I'm looking at your Etsy 16. Store right now. Some very cool stuff on here. Got a baby green tree python for $9. That's awesome. Emerald tree boa for $9.
Yep. $9 is going to be the little 5x7 size. 16 is the 8x10. And a few of them I've done 11 by 14, and those will be limited edition prints.
Gotcha.
Those are $25 to $26.
Very cool. And there's, I mean, there's all kinds of, there's a fallow deer, Nyala, and Goody Sapphire Tarantula, Bamboo Ball Python, and then like a moth and a lionfish. I mean, you're all over the place here. Veiled chameleons.
Yep. Yep. So once upon a time, I bred panther chameleons.
Oh, why? So why would you do that to yourself? I've never had the backbone to actually. They're beautiful. I like looking at them and watching videos about them, but I just hear so many stories about like veiled chameleons and panther chameleons that they're so what's the right word? Delicate.
High maintenance.
They're high maintenance. Yeah.
Like not horribly high maintenance, but higher maintenance than a tarantula or a snake.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm also learning that a lot of the reptiles and amphibians that I thought were really high maintenance and very delicate and would just be more of a hassle than they're worth are not actually that bad. Like, I wanted poison dart frogs forever. And when that was like, I was like, no, they're too high maintenance. I don't have that kind of time. I'm not that responsible when it comes to it. I mean, I've made it this far in life without having any children for a pretty daggone good reason. I'd forget to feed them one day or something. That's why tarantulas work so well for me. Cause it's like,
yeah,
I only got to feed them every couple of weeks. They're totally fine. But I got these dart frogs a few weeks ago and they're thriving so far. And you know, they're a lot more hardy than I think I was led to believe. And that may also be that just people have learned a lot more about keeping them in captivity and have really kind of honed in the husbandry on them.
But yeah, I think a lot of it is you have to get their type of food, which is sometimes pinhead crickets, sometimes it's fruit flies. I think that's what makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
but once they get bigger, you can get bigger food.
Yeah. That's the issue I'm having. Like the only issue I'm having with dart frogs is that they pretty much it's fruit flies is what they eat.
Yeah.
You know, supplement with springtails, but it's like, those are really small.
Yep. And so, that's, I feel like the hardest part about them.
Yeah. Yeah. I got them from Houston Frogs, and actually there'll be a video out next week, hopefully on it. He also sent me a bunch of like media and stuff like that to get the fruit fly cultures going. And like, I really need to get on it. But it's like, I'm dreading it. I'm like, oh, I really don't want to do this. I want to breed fruit flies.
Yeah, I have them all over my house. I have like 3 catchies.
I love those catchies. I need to get another one. I only have one down in my basement. But, you know, it's that time of year where they're starting to show up in the kitchen and stuff. Because they're just everywhere outside. So I might have to get a second one.
My problem is I'm a plant hoarder. So.
Ah, plant hoarder. What kind of? It's an interesting. So your house is a jungle? Is that what you're saying?
If it could look like Jumanji, I'd be so happy.
What kind of plants are you keeping?
It's just like pathos or monstera. I got a big taro plant outside that I'm hoping to bring in for the winter.
Yeah,
I don't want it to die.
It's interesting going through your Etsy store. Being a plant hoarder, I don't see a whole lot of drawings of plants.
I'm working on it.
Yeah.
My more recent drawings have had more elaborate backgrounds and plants in them because of that.
Gotcha. Well, just to go back to the jewelry for a second, because I'm kind of curious about how you, like there's a mule deer skull that's like sagebrush and sage. And it kind of looks like a skull with antlers and some plants around it. How do you, but it's like, it's also kind of cut and right next to it is a scarab beetle. So like, are you making this in-house or do you like send the drawings off to a company and then they kind of make it or?
Yep. I send my designs to a company with a laser cutter.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering how they cut those out.
Because it'd be thousands and thousands and the supplies to make them. And I'm like, well, I'll do all the designing. I'll let them make it. And then I put the packaging together. I even print my own little packaging.
That's cool. Yeah. So there's all kinds of interesting stuff on your Etsy store. And really, I enjoy it. And I don't even remember what the video was. I'm sorry. But I was making a video about something. And I had that drawing of the Carabina Versicolor and was just trying to come up with a cool opening. And I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I think people would like it. And I set it up and did some slow motion B-roll of it. And I didn't even like think too much about it. I was like, oh, this is just will be something that's eye catching. And people will be like, oh, I'm going to keep watching. And it's like I would say maybe not the majority of the comments, but there were a whole lot more comments. It felt like about like the art than like the entirety of the video. It's like, I should have just done a video on Laura's artwork. You're like, oh my God, that's beautiful. Where did you get that?
I'm sorry.
I was like, that's what you're focused on? The 10 minutes of that it took me to film that instead of the hours I spent on the rest of the video. It was pretty cool.
No, I feel your pain. Sometimes even in drawings, I'll do this drawing that I spend hours and months on.
Yeah.
And it gets no love. And then I do a drawing where it spent maybe a couple weeks on it. And everyone's like, it's amazing. It's the most beautiful thing you've done.
Yeah. I totally feel that. Like I spent, I don't know, probably 30, 40 hours shooting and editing these like nature documentary style videos on a tarantula. And like, and that's not even counting like creating the stage. Like I had to like build this little habitat that, you know, would look kind of like they're out in nature. And a lot of time went to that. And then I compare that to a video that I shot filmed, like, you know, shot and edited and uploaded within like 3 hours. And it gets like 2 to 3 times the amount of views. I'm like, why am I even trying? Like, I just talk to a camera and walk around with it. And my channel will just be blowing up. It's like there's no reward for spending a whole lot of time and effort on something, it seems sometimes.
I get it. And with Facebook's algorithm and Instagram's algorithm, actually, it's not too bad. Instagram's not too bad for me, but I have 6,000 followers on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I'll post something and it'll tell me 500 people saw this. And I'm like,
yeah, that's frustrating. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like I have. I don't remember how much anymore, like 84,000 subscribers somewhere around there on YouTube. And then it's like, they show the video sometimes to like maybe 3 or 4,000. Like it's like the recommendations is usually like a 10th of what the subscribe. I'm like, what's the point of having subscribers if you're not going to show them when I upload a new video?
Yeah, that's not right.
Let alone. And then Instagram's doing some weird things. They just, the CEO or something like that just released something like, we're not a photo sharing app anymore. And I was like, what, wait, what? It's like we're focusing more on
because I love stories Instagram because it's a photo sharing.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. It's like, why do you want to be TikTok? Like, why does everybody want to be TikTok right now? Like, that's not, maybe it'll last. I don't know, but it's completely different. There's space for all, you know, an app that's just sharing photos, an app that's long form video content, one that's short form, you know, we don't all have to just do whatever's popular in the moment. That's not.
Yeah. And I find myself on Instagram more often because I scroll through it and it's tarantulas and artwork and animals.
Yeah.
And I scroll through Facebook and it's like politics and politics. And I'm like,
yeah,
I want to see animals and art.
I'm very like, I'll get on Facebook mainly to post on the page or in the group and I might interact in there a little bit, but the majority, like I don't scroll through my feed at all on Facebook anymore. Cause it's like, I'm just going to get upset. And and occasionally scrolling through stuff on Instagram and somebody will like share a meme that's like just offensive or political. I'm like, this is Facebook crap. Why are you sharing it on Instagram?
Yeah.
We're going to unfollow you.
Occasional.
I don't want to see that.
It's every other one.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that how you do most of your marketing, is like posting on Facebook and Instagram? Or I mean, how do you get the word out about your art? Cause that's going to be so difficult.
It is. And, depending on what happens with the algorithm, a lot of people see it or a lot of people don't. And because tarantulas are kind of a niche thing, I have my fingers crossed every time people see it. Because at shows, I'll have people walking by and they're like, oh, I love all this. Tarantulas are a little scary, but I love all this. And I'm like, they're 2D. You know,
they're not going to bite you or move. So you do show, like, are you talking about like art shows or reptile expos or what kind of shows are you talking about?
Reptile expos are what I mainly do.
Okay.
I've occasionally done a Christmas show or the Oddities Expo.
Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with that, but it sounds cool.
It's cool. Yeah. If you like dead stuff or creepy stuff going on Oddities Expo.
Where, is that like in a specific town or is it something they do nationally?
It's all over nationally.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you do, so like if somebody's in the Colorado area and there's a reptile expo, you might be there selling some of your artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Especially if it's Denver. The far, far ones like Pueblo and Colorado Springs are kind of iffy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's so far and it's difficult for me because it's not my full-time job.
Yeah.
So I have to usually take time off work, and at least with a Denver one, I can just go.
Yeah. You just ride up the road or something.
Yep.
All right.
There's all these big shows I want to do, but it'd be so difficult, like Tinley or even some of the big Texas shows. I'd love to do them, but it's going to be a week-long thing if I do.
Yeah. And then are you going to sell enough to cover your expenses, let alone make a profit? Like that's something I've heard a lot from people that go to Tinley. Like, it's not even the cost of renting the table, which sometimes can be, you know, kind of expensive, but it's like you got to pay for hotels and food and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a 3-day expo or like, you know, I guess technically like a 2-day expo, but you usually got to have everything set up on Friday because there's like VIPs come in Friday evening. And, mm-hmm. you know, so they're like we're there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday sometimes. So it's like, you know, 5 days that we're not able to do anything but this. Are we going to sell enough to cover all of the costs and expense and time? And, you know,
yeah. And I'd love to do it, but man, it's so far.
Yeah. And I feel like it would be maybe not, but when you're like the competition would be really high or tough. And when you're like mm-hmm. at an expo like that where they're selling the actual animals live, and you're like, or you could buy a drawing of one. Like,
you know, on the flip side is so many people have their snake rooms and mm-hmm. their lizard rooms or tarantula rooms. They come and see my stuff and they're like, oh, I'd like to decorate my room or something like that. So I have a lot of vendors and a lot of random people or the people that have been dragged there by their friends. They see my wolf art. They see like the lynx I've done, and I sell a lot of non-exotic animals too.
Interesting. Yeah. I guess I didn't think about that. Do you sell the skulls and stuff that you draw? They're there as well.
Yep. I'll usually bring them and sell 5 or 6 of them.
Yeah. Those are some, I got to look those up on your Etsy store real quick. Cause I feel like
I don't have a whole lot right now.
Ooh, that one's glow in the dark.
Yeah. I started doing some glow in the dark ones.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I'll upload more probably over the weekend because I had a couple that didn't sell at the show. So.
Gotcha. Very cool. So you sell everything is through Etsy?
For the most part. Yeah.
Yeah. Very. Yeah. Now, if somebody wanted to contact you to commission a piece of specific art, how do they do that? Does that also go through Etsy or do they contact you on Instagram or?
Instagram, Etsy, whichever. Yeah. At this moment, I'll probably say I'm booked up because I am. But if there's any questions or people want to suggest anything, I listen and I try and answer whatever questions.
I've noticed a lot of crested gecko art. Do you keep crested geckos or used
years
to?
Years ago, I used to.
Yeah.
They're cool. They're cool geckos, but I noticed a lot of people really like them.
Yeah.
Really want the art. And last year I did a pink one. So this breeder had this really pinkish colored one. And I was like, can I draw that? I'll send you a print. So I drew it. I put cherry blossoms and some butterflies. It's like my number one selling print.
Yeah. What I was about to ask is what prints or types of animals sell the best, at least for
tarantulas.
You? Tarantulas are the biggest sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
There's not a lot of people that draw them.
Yeah. Draw them well. I think you should clarify that.
I see a couple other artists that do a decent job or really good art.
I mean, they got to be pretty difficult to draw.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to, and I'm not saying like snakes and geckos and stuff are easy to draw, but tarantulas just have something, just like the setae and the hair and the eyes, like there's a lot of details, and people that are into tarantulas are very particular, you know, like, and I don't know what it is. Like, there's some great artists out there, that I know and I've talked to, and they've drawn a tarantula, and it's like, I can't tell you what's wrong with that drawing, but it doesn't look right. Like, I don't know if it's like the ratio of the carapace to the abdomen or the length of the legs. Like, I'm not an artist, but it doesn't look right. So I don't know what to say.
I think it's practice.
Yeah.
If you draw a tarantula once or twice here or there, it'll be good, but it won't be as good if you've drawn 20, 30 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel bad that I can't explain to the person drawing what the issue is. I'm just like, it just doesn't look right, man. It's not, I have a friend, a guy I've known for years. He actually, he's a tattoo artist now, and he was doing a lot of flash art drawings and stuff like that. And it was just starting out. Wanted to support him, but I also wanted to get a cool design for a t-shirt. So I was like, hey, let me commission a drawing of a tarantula and like your like rockabilly flash art tattoo style. And he was like, yeah, no problem. And that was one of the longest processes in the world, because he'd send me the drawing. I'm like, that's not a tarantula, man. That looks more like a black widow. So I'd send him like pictures of tarantulas like this. But I mean, he's like trying to take these very intricate pictures of tarantulas and turn it into, when I say flash art, I don't know if you know what I mean, but I mean, it's very minimal detail, kind of like what a tattoo a sailor would have, like back in the 40s or whatever.
Like a new school. There's a word for it.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
That old style.
Yeah, that kind of like rockabilly. It's been years
since I've watched like a tattoo show.
Yeah, and then
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I mean, it was, and I felt like I was just giving him a hard time, but you know, he would send me the revision, and I'm like, well, the jaws, like the fangs you have drawn, are pinchers, and these need to be like pointed downward. I was like, that's a big deal. People were looking at me like, that's not a tarantula. The fangs are wrong. And he's like, okay. And then he'd revise it and send it back, and that would be fixed. And I'm like, yeah, but now the legs are like really pointy. Like, they need to be more round and robust. He was like, you're kidding me. And I'm like, dude, there's spiders are tough, man. I told you beforehand, like, you know, it's going to be difficult. There's take creative license. I'm not saying that, but you still have to make sure that it resembles a tarantula at least. Cause you know, even like the spacing of the eyes, people be like, well, now it's that's not what tarantula eyes look like. That's more of a huntsman or, you know, an ogre face or whatever. So I felt bad for him, not knowing anything about spiders and like nitpicking on the eye placement and the tips of the feet.
It's not just you. I mean, that's one of the hard things of taking commissions, is even if you try your hardest as an artist, sometimes people aren't happy. And I'm a people pleaser. I want to make sure they're happy. So even if I'm working on a commission for 6 months, just fixing little things here and there, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because I really want the person to be happy. They trusted me with their art. They paid me.
Yeah.
I want to give something back that they're happy about.
Yeah.
So I think artists get it.
Yeah. And I was like, do whatever you want with the actual artwork. You just got to make sure it's anatomically correct, I guess.
And, you know, that's hard to do
when
you go with a stylistic thing.
Yeah.
And but that's what I ended up doing with.
I was going to share a picture, but I don't think I have one handy, but yeah, it ended up looking really cool. I really dug it.
That's awesome.
But yeah. Always looking for some new artwork though. Like I want to get some cool t-shirts, you know, with just different types. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of my t-shirts right now, either like just logos or words, because I'm not an artist. So I don't know how to draw cool stuff.
Hey, I like my logo shirt I got. And it was even cooler because I didn't realize the Tarantula Collective was from the Borg, which made it so much cooler.
Yeah.
It was already cool, but I was like, oh, Borg.
Yeah. So you got one of the, like the first shirts then, huh? Where it still had like the kind of the Borg style insignia?
I don't think so. This was months ago. I was actually reading through the Tarantula Collective and I was just reading through the background and I was like, that's way cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely where it came. When I first started, I don't even think I'd done the YouTube, maybe like the first few YouTube videos. If you go back and look at it, instead of like the center of the abdomen, that little insignia was actually the Borg insignia, just straight from Star Trek. And I was doing that
old school shirt. So you let me know.
Well, someone gave me a heads up. It was like CBS and Paramount. I think it's CBS owned Star Trek at the time, but like they're suing anyone that does anything related to Star Trek, copyrighted infringement. And they're like, they'll come after you. And I was like, oh yeah. So I like, I had to stop selling all of it, pull everything down, because I was not about to get sued by Star. I mean, it would be kind of cool. I would frame that letter. If I got a cease and desist letter from Star Trek, I would totally frame that and hang it on the wall. But it's like, yeah,
partly why I don't do any fan art. Like, I really want to do a picture of the Lord of the Rings ring with the cool black tarantula. But
yeah,
I'm kind of concerned that I just wouldn't be able to sell prints. And if I did, I might get a letter.
How do people get away with doing fan art then?
Or do there's they, so they just... many people that do it. I mean, you're just unlucky if Disney finds you or, you know, Paramount.
Yeah. It, yeah.
I just don't want to take the chance.
I feel you. I mean, that's kind of how I felt. I mean, I knew it doing it. I was like, this is a little risky, but I was also like, I've got 100 subscribers on YouTube and a couple thousand people.
They don't care at that
point. Yeah. It's like, who's going to see it? And then it was like when YouTube started getting big and Instagram was getting real big and people were like, hey, you know, you may want to think about, because that's technically a copyright. Like you have not changed it. You just kind of put it in the middle of a spider. I'm like, yeah, you're right. So I was like, well, I still wanted to like kind of pay homage to Star Trek. So what I replaced it with was actually something I made myself, but it was kind of reminiscent of like, I don't know how. I take it you like Star Trek just from the like, fact.
Especially the Picard Star Trek.
That's so like the Next Generation. Favorite. And
yeah.
Have you watched Star Trek Picard, like the new series on CBS? Not the
new one, but I do want to watch it.
It's good. Yeah. I even like it all. Discovery is good. Even like they have an animated series now called Lower Decks, which is hilarious. it's almost like it's canon, but it's comical. It's about the ensigns or whatever that, you know, live in the lower decks and don't know what the bridge crew's doing and just the shenanigans they get into that you never hear about in any of the series because they're just the background, you know, people, drones working, getting bossed around.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But if you go...
I like all those old ones.
Yeah.
Like old SG-1 Stargate and Stargate Atlantis.
Big fan of Stargate as well. I mean, this is kind of a deep cut, and they mention it in the original Star Trek, but I don't think they actually show the race of aliens. But in Star Trek Enterprise, the one with Scott Bakula, like it was like the first Enterprise to ever go out, kind of like the origin to the whole Star Trek franchise. Mm-hmm. They ran in towards the end, maybe like in the last couple of seasons. They were dealing with some time travel and all this kind of weird stuff, but they ran into this race called the Tholians. And I don't know if you're familiar. Most people have no idea who the Tholians were, but as soon as I saw them, I was like, oh man, that's awesome. Because they were an arachnid species. Like they had developed on their planet. It was the spiders that were the ones that, you know, won the evolutionary race. So like they had to live in very specific, like high pressure, high temperature. So they couldn't really interact with, you know, most of the characters on Star Trek, but they were highly xenophobic and spoke this like weird language that nobody could really translate. So they were really hard to communicate with. And, you know, but they were also extremely advanced and very dangerous, and they had no patience for humans or, you know, got humanoid aliens. So people thought they were violent and like horrible, but really we were just bugs to them almost, you know, like barely sentient bugs to these Tholians, but just the way they looked. So, I don't have it on the skull here if you take that and turn it upside down, that's like a two-dimensional view of what they look like.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, it's not really what they look like, but it was kind of what inspired me when I was drawing that.
That's way cool.
and the main reason I turned it upside down is because it didn't fit into the abdomen the way it was. But when I flipped it, and I was like, well, now that's totally different than Star Trek. It's so poorly drawn. I don't think anybody would ever catch on to it. But
yeah, I mean, if you change it enough, style it differently, no one will know. But it's cool because it's least, like your own link to it.
Yeah, at least as far as like it, you know. Personally, I know that there's still a connection. I couldn't use the Borg insignia anymore, but I got something else that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So we just I just nerded out. Sorry about that, everybody. Like, didn't even realize this was a Star Trek podcast.
It's important. Hey, it goes back to the origins of the Tarantula Collective.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, I think, just how all that started. And there's a lot of my videos, like one angle that I shoot at, there's the NCC-1701D, like the next generation's Enterprise. I have like a poster on the wall. It's like a canvas kind of thing, just like taped on there, just because I thought it looked cool. And I don't even remember how I got it. It was like, maybe I ordered it off Wish or something, because it was like free with shipping. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I got it and I was like, this is much smaller than I thought it was. And I was like, what am I going to do with it? And I just like put it up there because it looks cool when the blue lights are on it. And most people don't notice it because it's kind of out of focus and it's blue light on a blue poster. So it kind of, you know, fades in the background. But every now and then somebody will see it and be like, is that the Starship Enterprise? I'm like, yeah, it is.
Why, yes. Yes, it is.
Good eye. Yeah. I sometimes I'm like, maybe I should have made a YouTube channel just on Star Trek. But those guys are like super nerds. They know a whole lot more about it than I do.
Yeah, I know more about Stargate than Star Trek.
Yeah. Which one is your favorite? SG-1, Atlantis? You like Atlantis the most?
I love Atlantis. But okay. I don't know. I love SG-1 too.
See,
like especially the first few seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I like SG-1 because that was the first one. Like I love Stargate the movie. Mm-hmm. And then when they did this TV series, I was hesitant. And it was on Showtime, I think, originally when it came out. Something like that. It was on paid cable.
It was.
And my parents were anti-cable. They were like, we're not, you know, they're very conservative Christian people. Like they wouldn't even let me watch Fox a lot of the times because the Simpsons were on there and they were too rude. So it's like, but I remember when that first started. Maybe like the very beginning, my dad would have one of his friends record it on VHS and bring it over. So we would watch, you know, we would watch Stargate that way. And then, but then, you know, eventually I think they moved to sci-fi or something like that. And by that point they had got cable. So we were watching Stargate and, I really enjoyed it, but what I think would really, the one I like the most, which a lot of people don't, is Stargate Universe. Like when that one came out, I was like, this is the ticket. Like I loved it. Have you watched that at all?
I didn't like it because it wasn't so much about the missions. It was more drama.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got enough drama in my life. I want to see them go to planets. And
well, they ended up doing that a lot in Universe. Mm-hmm. Like if you get through like the first six episodes, because I mean, like they get ran off the Icarus base or whatever, and they jump through and now they're on this ancient ship, and it takes them a while to kind of like, I mean, there's a lot of interpersonal dynamics and power struggle and figuring out how the ship works and stuff. But then they figure out a little bit, and then it's like, just becomes a story of slowly learning how the ship works and how to control it. And also every so often the ship would stop in a solar system, and there'd be like five or six gates, and then they could like go to these planets and find the resources they need to stay alive until the next, you know, and that, so they were going to some really cool planets and way on the other side of the universe. And I was like, yeah, I really enjoyed it, but it was completely different.
It was like, it just was a lot of drama.
Yeah. A whole lot of drama. That is for sure. But yeah, once you get past that first half of the season, when they actually kind of settle into stuff, it's not nearly as bad. But it was shot completely different than any of the other Stargates as well. It was all handheld, and instead of more like studio. So, you know, the camera's moving around a little bit more, and it very dark. It was not bright and a bunch of laser battles and stuff. It was, the whole thing's kind of dark and dirty and creepy and raw. And I think that's why I liked it. It was a lot like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And I think it was actually even maybe the same directors or producers or something. I think they kind of merged on that one. And
yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So I was really digging it. But I also liked Battlestar Galactica. So I'm embarrassing myself now. I draw my line at Babylon 5. I never got into Babylon 5. That's like uber nerd. But my dad watched it. He enjoyed that show. So maybe one day I'll end up watching it. So that's where my love for sci-fi came from, was my dad. How did you end up liking Stargate and Star Trek and stuff like that?
Oh, like when I was little, my favorite movie was Alien.
Oh, okay.
And Predator.
Yeah.
So just grew up liking it.
Yeah. That was the weird thing about my parents. Like, couldn't watch The Simpsons. I couldn't watch, you know, Rugrats. What was it? Beavis and Butthead. Ren and Stimpy. That was the one. I couldn't watch Ren and Stimpy because they were too rude and too much fart humor and stuff like that. So they were very, very protective about what I could watch, except when it came to sci-fi. Like, could watch Alien and Aliens and Predator and RoboCop and what was that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie? Scarred me for life. It was a Total Recall. Yeah. Yeah, that was it. I was in second or third grade when that came out. My dad brought it home from the V's. Like, it wasn't even Blockbuster because we had Blockbuster in our town, but it was like our locally owned type of Blockbuster. And it was one of those, like, my mom says, you can't, it's rated R. He can't watch that. And then she went to do her thing. And he's like, let's watch it. And he hadn't seen it. So, like, you know, a woman with three breasts is like within like the first 20 minutes. And that was the first time I had ever seen breasts. And it's like, that's what they look like. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I saw all of the Schwarzenegger R movies when I was little, but that was about all I could see. I wasn't allowed to watch any others.
I may have told this story on the podcast before, but it had to be second or third grade when I watched RoboCop. And again, very sheltered life. Parents never drank, smoked, cussed, none of that. And then I watched RoboCop and learned all kinds of cool words and didn't even know. Like, I didn't even have the foresight to be like, hey, that is what you call a curse word. Never say that. Like, I didn't say it. I was just like, wow, those are some very powerful words you say. And I go to school the next day. It had to have been second. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. But we're playing in the playground and I grab my friend, like we're playing cops and robbers or whatever, running around shooting. And I grab him by the shirt and pin him up against the fence. Like, listen here, you MF or SOB. And just like, and everybody's like shocked, like, oh, and they run and tell the teacher and she grabs me by the arm, drags me to the principal's office. She's like, where did you learn this language? Like, we've never had problem with you. Like, you're always such a good kid. Why did you just cuss out your best friend on the playground? Like, you're like, what is cussed out?
RoboCop.
Like, I don't know what cussed out means. She's like, you were using swear words. And I'm like, yeah. And like, where did you learn those words? And like, repeat them back. I'm like, oh, I watched RoboCop with my dad. That's what they said. And man, my mom was so mad at him for weeks. It was funny. But yeah, so that's how I that's how my childhood was scarred. rude humor is bad, but graphic and gory sci-fi is totally okay.
Yep, that's kind of how I grew up too. Like, yeah. I was allowed to watch Predator, Alien, Terminator.
Yeah,
but I couldn't watch the Spice Girls movie.
Well, they're probably doing you a favor there. I still haven't seen
it. Actually, watching it like older,
yeah,
I was like, there's some funny parts in this.
Yeah. It's funny looking back.
Stupid, but funny.
Yeah. Like, you know, just the weird stuff I wasn't allowed to watch compared to what we did watch. Like, yeah, like the Terminators and also just like terrible B movies. Like, I mean, I think my dad just went to, it was called Movie Max, like the ripoff of Blockbuster. And would just go to the sci-fi section and grab a handful of movies and bring them home. Because there was one, it was called like, I don't even remember, Carnosaurus or something like that. It was about little tiny dinosaurs. Like somehow they it was like Jurassic Park, but they brought it back. But they were like small, like the size of a dog. And they were going around neighborhoods eating people. It was very gory. You know, I thought it was going to be cool. Like, you know, I don't even know. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. Before we wrap everything up, I am a little curious, like, when you, how long did it take you to get to the level you're at right now where you were like, hey, my people want to pay me for my drawings? Like, I mean, did this start in high school or is it something that's come about more recently?
So it started probably around high school, but I drew a lot of OCs, which are short for own characters. I drew a lot of wolves, a lot of dogs, leopards, that sort of thing, but they were more cartoony. And over the years, I wanted to develop more of a realistic style. And I actually kind of shut down for a couple years and didn't do a whole lot, just practiced or life got difficult. But when I jumped back in, and I was like, all right, let's draw some more realistic chameleon portraits. Mm-hmm. Let's draw snake portraits. And some of my earlier stuff, you'll notice, doesn't have a background because backgrounds are hard. And over the last few years, I've been trying to do backgrounds and put more time and effort into those, and putting botany and like the Celadonia one, I had like a waterfall and some different South American plants in it. And I've really tried to practice that and do a better job with that. But it's only been in the last few years that I've been like, all right, let's get a good setup. Let's make prints. Let's, you know, be more professional.
And you do it all, like, I don't know if this is the right terminology, but you do it all with like raw materials. Like, actually, it's all done on with like pencils and paper and like physical stuff.
Some of my examples. So like, this is a paper that I started using. Strathmore bristle board. I like it. It's a great paper, but I wanted more tooth.
More tooth? So from
texture.
Oh, okay.
So that you can layer colors.
Gotcha.
So then I went to Strathmore mixed media.
Gotcha.
And it gives you more tooth and layers.
Gotcha. Okay.
So this is my go-to for typical colored pencils. So like Prismacolors, Polychromos, Luminance, Derwent Lightfast. This is what I'm going to use.
Okay.
But I've been doing a lot of pastels, and this is the paper I bought. And it's Pastel Matte.
Okay.
By Clarifonte. And for the like 11 by 14 size.
Mm-hmm.
It's $60 for a bat, just one pad.
Yeah.
So it's like $60 for, I think, 10 sheets or 12 sheets.
Yeah. It's like $5-6 so a piece of paper.
it's so good.
Yeah.
So if you're looking into doing pastels, this is the paper you want.
Very just cool.
Invest.
My niece, she's, oh man, this is terrible. I should know. She is in, maybe she's a freshman in high school now. She's either in eighth or ninth grade, right around that age. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit older. I think this is her first year. I don't remember. I'm terrible, uncle. I can't keep track of them. But she was really into art and drawing. And you brought, when you said OC, own characters, that kind of like, because that was what she was doing. And, you know, doing a lot of she had like little cartoon foxes and fox and something else, like just like, you know, little mammals. And you know, and like she started a little Twitter where like they had each of the characters had like their own little Twitter handle and would interact with each other. It was kind of cute. And she was like, you know, I wanted to do what I could to kind of support her in her art. And I asked my sister, I was like, you know, what does she want for Christmas this year? And my sister was like, oh, she's really looking for some art supplies, because there's some things that, you know, we just can't get her right now. Like we got her this other stuff and it's kind of expensive. We can't afford it. And I was like, oh, hey, awesome. I will do that. Thinking that she was going to need papers and pencils and stuff like that. And what she sent me a link for was a pad, like some kind of like screen with a stylus that you hook up to a laptop and draw on. And that's how she creates her art. And
I was just a Wacom like a tablet.
Yeah. Something like that. I was like, what in the, like, how does she make art with this? It kind of confused me, because I was like, I was thinking that was what you use for animation. I mean, I don't know anything about it. I'm like, are you sure this is what she wants? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. So now I just wonder like how many people use that.
You're a digital artist. You need a tablet.
Yeah. Digital art. That's so wild. That really should be more.
Yeah. And it's kind of the end thing right now is digital art.
Yeah. Personally, I think I prefer the I don't want to say real art, but the non-digital art.
Yeah, it's all real art, but you know, traditional art is traditional.
Yeah. What's that saying? I remember it was Carl Sagan or something, but it was like, you know, the technology you're raised with is just second nature. It's just reality. And then between, I think it was like 18 to 35, it's revolutionary, but very cool. And then like anything that comes out after you're 35 is heretical. It's like, it's from Satan and it's terrible and it's going to destroy the world. It's like, that's the age I'm kind of getting at right now. I'm like, what? That is junk. You don't need that.
Yep. And those, gosh, those Wacom tablets are like $2,500, $3,000 for the good ones.
Yeah. That's not what she got for Christmas. I think it was like $200 or whatever. The one I got, I was like, this is ridiculously expensive. I was just like, that's not that bad.
You know, there's good ones that are around that price. So if you're just starting out, like I used to have a little Wacom tablet and I used it occasionally, but then I realized I liked traditional art better.
Yeah.
So I still use my little tablet occasionally, but not often.
Yeah. It's fascinating. And she's at that age where I am no longer the cool uncle. I'm the weird uncle. It's like, I think when they came over for Christmas, she spent the majority of her time down in the basement on her phone and computer. Like, I'm not hanging out with you family weirdos. Like, and I was like, I remember being that age. Like, this is so uncool.
Yeah, you could be into anything and you'd still be the weird one.
Yeah. You know, if I bring out the geckos or the snake or something, then she's like, oh, this is awesome. And we'll hang out. But as soon as we're just sitting around talking, it's like, yeah, you guys are lame. I'm going to talk to my friends online.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We all go through that age.
Yeah. Yeah. And my kid's like, he thinks I'm the biggest dork in the world. He's like embarrassed to tell his friends at school what I do. It's like, I'm not telling anybody you have a YouTube channel because then they'll watch it and make fun of me. I'm like, ouch, dude.
Yeah, but even if you like if you had a great popular now in style, this and that, kids are going to make fun of whatever.
Yeah, that's very true. It doesn't matter.
They're mean.
Kids are jerks.
Yeah.
That's funny. So, I mean, is there anything else that we should know about Laura or Grey Ghost Creations or, I mean, anything that we didn't cover you want to talk about?
I mean, I could show some of my other pencils that I use if anyone's interested.
Yeah. I mean, it's a podcast, so majority of the people are just listening. They're not going to see it, but you can explain it to them. Okay.
So I have, let's see, Carn d'Arche Luminance. I would say they are the best pencils. They run about $4 a piece, but they're the best.
Are they colored pencils or like what you do? Mm-hmm. Now you start out with like, do you start out drawing with the color or do you start out like with just like a regular graphite pencil and sketch out the outlines? And then what's that process like?
I used to do graphite pencils, but I've come to find that it shows through my pencils. So I started doing colored pencils and I just do my original sketch, usually on crappy paper. And then I trace that onto the good paper with the appropriate colored pencil.
Okay.
So another good one is these Derwent Lightfasts. They're creamy. They're, I believe, oil-based. And light fast is always good.
So you got
also
all these different types of pencils. You gotta bear with me. I'm a little slow.
It's fine.
So you've got all these different types of pencils. Do you start a drawing and you're like, and you use one pencil that's like one type and the whole drawing, you stick with that type or are you mixing and matching them?
I used to do one type, but over the years, I've learned that they all work well together.
Okay.
And different brands make different colors. So I'll use a little bit of Prismacolor, some Polychromos, some Lightfast, all in the same drawing. And they really mesh well together.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been buying these pencil sets for years. I probably have about $1,500 in pencil sets.
Wow.
But it took 10, 15 years to get them all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think some people don't acknowledge or realize that. Like, they look at my collection of tarantulas and stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that must have cost you a fortune. It's like spread out over a couple decades, mm-hmm. or even just like 5 or 6 years. It adds up over time, but like, it's not like I dropped thousands of dollars one day. And, you know, like that would be a little ridiculous. Or even like with camera equipment, you know, like sometimes it's staggering when I started doing this full time, I was like, all right, I really should get some insurance on this stuff in case it all like burns up in a fire or something. And like adding up, or doing my taxes. Like this year, it was the first time I did taxes and had to like count this as a business. And we'll just look at how much I spent on batteries and, you know, like memory cards and cameras and lenses and stuff. And like, I was afraid to show my wife. I was like, how can I get this to our accountant without her seeing it? Because if she sees what I spent, she's going to divorce me.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a couple times on my taxes where my art supplies have been thousands and thousands, but you need good art supplies. It's all part of the business and it's not all in one spot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if I had to spend it all in one lump sum, I would choke and be like, yep, nope, we're not doing that. That's irresponsible. But a little bit every week, you know, over the course of a year, it definitely adds up. And I was like, when we were doing our taxes, like my wife has a friend who, you know, she and her husband run like a Jackson Hewitt or something like that. You know, so it's like, they know us, and at least they know her. And we go in there and I'm like, pretty, almost like apologizing to the lady doing our taxes. Like, I know this is a lot. And she's like, it's a business. Like, first couple of years, you're going to lose money, you know? And it's like, you do it out and see how much revenue came in from like Google Ads and selling merch and stuff like that compared to what went out. And it's like, I could easily be on food stamps and welfare if that was our only source of income at that year. Cause it was like, I barely made any profit at all. You know,
and that's like, partly why I'm a full-time analyst.
Yeah.
And then in my evenings and weekends, I get to do the job I love, which is art.
Yeah. It doesn't always pay the bills. Hopefully this year, at least YouTube will pay the bills. We'll see. I mean, but even she was like, it's going to take you. Like, you're probably going to lose money the first couple of years, and it's probably going to be 5 to 10 years before you're actually making a decent living. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's crazy.
I know. Yeah.
But it seems like art would be even more difficult because you don't have a platform like YouTube where you can like really push that kind of stuff out. And so if people are wanting to follow you on, you know, so they can stay up to date with what, you know, you have available for sale or what's coming out in the near future, what's the best platforms to follow you on?
Facebook, Instagram.
And that's
I even have a TikTok now.
Gray Ghost Creations, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Gray is spelled with an A.
Yes. Even though I always throw an E in there for some reason.
You know, it was a hard choice. I was like, do I want to do E or A? Because both of them are correct, technically. Yeah. But A is more American. E is more European.
Yeah.
I went with the more American one.
Every time I type out your name, like, well, I think I've tagged you in a couple of posts or something like that. And I always think E is European, A is American. But then something in my brain goes, but for like, I don't even know what it is. It's like my brain's like, no, but it's fancy. So I'm sure she went with the E for European. I'm like, and I do that. And then like, I'm like, oh wait, no, it's totally an A.
Yep. It's an A. I had to be a rebel.
How do you, this is embarrassing to ask, but how do you pronounce your full name?
Laura Airy Lee.
Exactly.
So Airy is like,
yeah, exactly. As it's spelled
with the E.
I stopped when I was introducing it. I was like, and in my head it was Laura Airy Lee, but then I was like, oh man, that's a fancy last name. It may not be anything like it sounds. what kind of Airy Lee, what kind of name is that?
Well, it's two names technically. Like, okay. My last name is Lee.
Okay.
But Airy is my maiden name, so I just put the whole thing out.
So you're married?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What is
my husband's scared of tarantulas, but yeah. You know what? He's gotten more used to them and appreciates them more. And yeah. He got me one for our anniversary.
So. Oh, that's sweet. My wife has not done that yet. But I did get, when we got married, Tanya, Fear Not Tarantulas, sent me two Harpicteria pulchripedes for a wedding present. It's like a his and
that's
her.
Cool.
I was like, that's more like a his and his. I don't want a tarantula.
You're like, well, I'll name one after you. So
yeah, I was like, it's Mickey and Mallory.
Yeah.
After natural born killers. I thought it'd be funny. She didn't see the funny humor in that. Yeah. So you're married. Do you all have children?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So you're
just
smart.
Cats and lizards and snakes. And
yeah. Takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, I'm so busy in life.
Yeah, I can imagine. And have you grown up? You always lived in Colorado, in the Denver area? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to Denver once. We were flying back from Sedona, Arizona. I guess technically Phoenix, Arizona. And we were supposed to go, we were going to Minneapolis maybe or something like that. I don't remember where the layover was, or Chicago. I think it was Chicago. And I don't remember if it was like the landing gear wouldn't go up or something was wrong with the plane and maybe an engine was messing up. It was a little scary. And then like, we got to do an emergency landing at Denver. And it was like,
scary.
Yeah. I was like, man. And then we get there and at first they were like, all right, we landed safely. But this, we can't put this plane back up in the air. So we're gonna have to find another plane, and it could be anywhere from like 8 to 20 hours before we're able to do this. So, you know, once once you get off the plane, like, you know, go to the ticket agent or whatever. And if it's going to be longer, they'll give you meal tickets or maybe hotel accommodations or whatever it was. And I was excited because I was like, I've never been to Denver before. And I will be able to sneak out of the airport for a little bit and go check it out. And then like, before we even got like taxied up to where we get off, they're like, actually, there's another plane that you guys can get right now, but you're gonna have to pretty much run. So it's like, we get off the plane. And because wherever we were going, they had another plane that was going to, I don't know, you know how airports are. So like, it turned from this very excited, we get to go check out Denver for a few hours, to now we have to run from one side of the airport to the other to catch another plane that's leaving in like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty bummed. So I've always wanted to go check out Denver.
Yeah. You know, Denver, it's crowded.
Really? I wouldn't think that.
So Colorado was the first state to legalize marijuana.
Yeah.
Which was stupid. The country should have done it.
Yeah.
So everyone flooded here.
Yeah.
And there's just tons and tons of people. Like a one bedroom, one bathroom apartment here is around $1,500 to $2,000 a month.
Oh my gosh.
It's outrageous.
It's like San Diego.
Yeah, it really is. I had to drive to the airport the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be half hour, 40 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
Took an hour and a half just one way.
Wow.
And it was just traffic.
Yeah.
No accidents, just traffic.
And it's not just a lot of people. It's a lot of hippies.
Those hipsters. You know, it's just people flooded here, and then there were more jobs here, so more people stayed here, and it's just very crowded now.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's beautiful. I mean, I'm in an area that's nearby to the foothills and the mountains,
mm-hmm.
so it's nice to be able to just drive up to the mountains. Just maybe 15 minutes from my house, there's a really nice foothill trail.
Nice.
And just the other night, we found a rattlesnake on it. It was really exciting. I'm always looking for crab spiders. So, you know, there's some cool wildlife, and it's not far.
Yeah.
But Denver itself, it's crowded.
Interesting.
Good food, but crowded.
Yeah. That's good to know. Because when I think of Colorado, I think of like wide open ranches. Like
maybe like 15 years ago.
Running into people every 15 or 20 miles or something. It just seems so spread out and open. But yeah, I mean, guess
it's
Denver's a big city.
Parts of, Denver is not spread out. There are no ranches.
Yeah.
But Colorado is a big state and there's chunks of open areas.
Yeah. That's what I like about West Virginia. It's the forests and hiking trails and all kinds of beautiful stuff. Like, we could drive, 6 hours south and get down to like the New River and stuff like that and go camping and hiking and whitewater rafting. Or I could go like 10 minutes up the road and it's equally beautiful forests, and it's weird. I think there's maybe, I always get this wrong, but I feel like 1.5 million people in the entire state, it's like the population of most big cities like are spread out in our entire state. And the way that it's like, I think the largest city, Charleston, only has like 40 or 50,000 people in it. The town sounds I'm in nice is like 25,000 people or something. We went to a Dave Matthews Band concert last night outside of Pittsburgh. And it was like the first concert my kid's ever been to. And so we were like, this would be a good one to take him to. It'd be nice and chill. And we're looking there, we got lawn seats. So we're kind of up at the top looking down at this crowd of people. And there was like 18, 20,000 people there. He's like, wow, there's a lot of people. I was like, this is about the same amount of people that live in our entire town back home.
Wow.
All in one place.
That sounds nice. Yeah.
But the way West Virginia is, it's so hilly and rural. It's like everybody's spread out, everybody's on these little haulers and small little towns and stuff like that. So I mean, it's interesting. Like anywhere you're driving around. I mean, there's like Charleston, Wheeling, Huntington, Morgantown and Beckley. Those are pretty much like your five large towns, we'll say. And they've got between like 20 to 50,000 people. And there's hundreds of other towns that maybe have a few hundred or a few thousand. So it's an interesting state to go driving around.
And yeah, just I bet.
Finding weird. There's no direct routes anywhere. It's like, it's an interest, a lot of side roads and I love it. It's a lot of fun, but.
Yeah, that sounds really nice. Denver's just so crowded. We had Elitch Gardens. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they're going to have to close down. I think part of it was COVID.
What is Elitch Gardens?
It's like a giant amusement park.
Oh, okay.
And it's been there since I can remember. But they're going to close it down because of COVID and because property taxes are so high. Mm. So they'll probably close it and put a bunch of apartments there.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's like another big one was Casa Bonita. I don't know if you've heard of it. Most people have heard of it from South Park.
Yeah,
it's a whole South Park episode.
It was the first thing I thought of, and I'm like, I'm not even going to say that because that was just embarrassing.
Yeah, that's how. Like, if you live here and you're a native here, you know Casa Bonita.
Okay,
and it's known for having. It's not crappy food. It's just not good for the price you pay. Gotcha. Because it's like 15, 20 bucks a person to get in.
Yeah.
But it's about the experience. There's this big show and stuff like that. Well, when COVID hit, the owners just vanished and employees went to go get in and it was all just closed up.
Mm.
Well, they closed it down. And I guess the creators of South Park came and bought it.
Interesting. So
we'll see how it goes in the future.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Yeah.
And Trey Parker.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. That happened when I lived in Daytona Beach for a while and there wasn't COVID or anything like that, but they were, for whatever reason, there were restaurants that like were going out of business and they didn't. I think it was like right after one of the hurricanes kind of went through and they just never really rebounded, but they didn't like tell the employees or anything. They just showed up for work and there were chains on the door and said, this business is now closed. And they just didn't have a job anymore. It's like, you couldn't even give them like a heads up. You probably knew for weeks you were going to be shutting down, but they didn't want people to like find other jobs and stop waiting tables while they were still open. So
it was
dirty. I was like, man, that sucks. And then because that would happen, now the entire staff is looking for jobs. So the restaurants that were hiring, like it was high competition. It was a mess. And I was like, that's not cool. So I feel their pain. But Colorado is interesting. I've been invited out there a few times. I'd like to go to a reptile expo or something, but with COVID, it's so difficult to get around. Mm-hmm. People ask me all the time, are you going to this reptile expo in like California or New Jersey? And it's like, And I'm not leaving my state.
Yeah. Just wait.
Yeah. There's all the time in the world. Like, it's a little dicey right now. I felt bad because it was not this past year. It was right when COVID hit. So I guess that was like March of 2019, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that date's right, but we were driving. So it wasn't, I didn't have plane tickets, but had hotel reservations and we had made plans and everything to go to, you know, Tinley Park, and states kept shutting down. And then the news kept getting worse and worse. And I kept going to the NARBC's website or, you know, their Facebook page. And they're like, you know, COVID's happening. Cases are on the rise, but we're taking all these steps. You wear masks, we'll have hand sanitizers, no matter what, we're not shutting down the show. People are, you know, cause at that point people were like vendors were already in town, you know, like they had already packed up and then moved there and invested a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling my wife, like, look, if you don't want to go, that's I understand. I'm not going to like force you to come with me, but I've made a commitment to be there. Like, mm-hmm. people are there, businesses. Like, I have, interviews set up and podcasts and supposed to pick up some stuff from some different breeders and suppliers. And I was like, it's a business thing. I got to go. And she kept saying like, no, like they're going to shut it down. And I was like, no, as long as they say it's open and I'm going, pack my bags and everything. And then the governor was like, yeah, anything over 20 people shut down. It was like the day before, like it was like the next morning I was getting on the road to drive out there. I was like, oh, she still holds that over my head. Like, I was supposed to go to Arizona into September. I don't know if you're familiar with Bugs in Cyberspace or Shapes in Nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jesse does. He does some interesting wildlife artwork, kind of. I don't know if that's how he describes it, but like, you know, like animal drawings. And they have they moved down to somewhere outside Tucson, and it's called it's in the Sky Island kind of area. And I think they call it maybe like Sky Island Resort or Ranch or something like that. And they in their Instagram post or whatever, their bio, it says bed bug and breakfast, which I'm like, that's not a great description. Cause it sounds like you have bed bugs with your breakfast. It kind of cracks me up, but like they pick you up from the airport, they drive you out to their ranch. They got a little guest house they put you up in. And I think he said they make you breakfast and dinner. And during the day, you wake up, you eat breakfast, you hop in, they drive you somewhere out in the middle of the desert, and you go looking for reptiles and bugs and tarantulas and stuff like that. And yeah, and they just kind of take you all these different places, and they got bats, and it just seems really cool. And it's kind of like their business that they're launching. So I was going to go out there and make a video. Aquarimax he was just out there. He has like a 3-part video on it. So I'm even more excited. But now the Delta cases are going through the roof. And my wife's like, maybe we should not go. I'm like, it's business. Like, I've already made a commitment. Like, this the same. And she's like, yeah, remember last time we had this conversation and I turned out to be right? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you don't want to go out there and then they shut down the airports or something and you're stuck in Arizona. I'm like, that's true. So, yeah. And I tried to like, we're going to be out in the middle of the desert. Like, it's just going to be me and him. Like, there's only maybe like 5 of us max. And she's like, yeah, but it's not going to be good. We should wrap this up, because now I'm just rambling about COVID and things that are out of my control. But I appreciate you coming on and talking about, you know, your artwork, because it's fascinating stuff. I've always kind of been curious about the process and the, you know, the supplies and stuff that you use and where do you get your inspiration. And if people want to check you out, it's Etsy.com. And make sure I get this right. /shop/ Gray Ghost Creations. And that's Gray with an A. It'd probably be easier if they just search Google for Gray Ghost Creations. Because I feel like every time I do that, the first thing that pops up is your Etsy. but Gray Ghost Creations on Instagram. Gray Ghost
Creations.
You're on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok as well. And I'll put links to your website and to all your social media in the show notes of the podcast. If anybody wants to check it out, or if you're watching the video version on YouTube, there'll be links down in the description. So you can just click that link, take you straight there. And some really cool colored pencil drawings and all other kinds of stuff. So, I mean, you got tarantulas, snakes, mammals, reptiles. It's all there. Even some jewelry, which is cool. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap up and go?
Someday I'd like to do shirts and stuff, but that's a little ways out, because that's kind of, you know, it's a whole nother step.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you. Maybe you and I should talk off air sometime. Maybe we could collaborate on a cool tarantula shirt if you're interested. I don't know. I just put you on the spot.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, wow.
Definitely.
We got to wrap this up, but I just came across your drawing of a bearded dragon. That is beautiful. I got to stop looking at your website. Mm-hmm. I keep finding pictures. I'm like, oh, I want that one too. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been a lot of fun. If you guys want to check her out, I'll have all the links down below in the description as well as the show notes of the podcast. If you enjoy listening to these podcasts and you're on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to leave a 5-star review. If you're on Spotify, follow YouTube, hit that like button and subscribe. All that fun stuff you do to support, help, you know, get the word out about the podcast. It means a lot. Laura, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing all this information. And I guess we're gonna have to end it here. You want to say goodbye to everybody before we wrap it up?
Yeah. Bye everyone. It's really been awesome talking about art and sci-fi and all the good stuff. And, it's always nice to talk with people that enjoy tarantulas because they're so few and far between. So
that's very true.
Thank you.
I'm sure they really enjoyed hearing about your artwork. They probably did not enjoy us talking about sci-fi, especially me. But yeah, whatever. You get the good with the bad.
We'll see.
All right. Well, Laura, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody listening. And we will we'll see you all next week. Goodbye. It always freezes on you when you, I'll edit it out, but you're always have a strange facial expression. And it's like,
oh, please edit it.
I'm like, she's like really staring at me intently. And I'm like, oh wait, no, she's frozen.